We're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, Chapter 31, entitled The Movements of the Living Entities, text number 43.
Dehena jiva buddhena
lokalokam
manuvrajan bunjana eva karmani karo chaviratam puman
dehena jiva buddhena
lokalokam manuvrajan
bunjana eva karmani
karo chaviratam puman
dehena on account of the body.
Jiva bhutena,
possessed by the living entity.
Lokad,
from one planet.
Lokam,
to another planet.
Anuvrajan,
wondering.
Bunjanaha,
enjoying.
Eva,
so.
Karmani,
fruit of activities.
Karoti,
he does.
Aviratam,
incessantly.
Puman,
the living entity. Translation. Due to his particular type of body, the materialistic living entity wanders from one planet to another, following fruit of activities. In this way, he involves himself in fruitive activities and enjoys the result incessantly. Purport. When the living entity is encaged in the material body, he is called Jiva Bhuta, and when he is free from the material body, he is called Brahma Bhuta. By changing his material body, birth after birth, he travels not only in different species of life, but also from one planet to another. Lord Chaitanya says that the living entities, bound up by fruitive activities, are wandering in this way throughout the whole universe. And if by some chance or by pious activities they get in touch with a bona fide spiritual master by the grace of Krishna, then they get the seat of devotional service. After getting this seat, if one sows it within his heart and pours water on it by hearing and chanting, the seed grows into a big plant, and there are fruits and flowers which the living entity can enjoy even in this material world. This is called the Brahma Bhuta stage. In his designated condition, a living entity is called materialistic, and upon being freed from all designation, when he is fully Krishna conscious, engaged in devotional service, he is called liberated. Unless one gets the opportunity to associate with a bona fide spiritual master by the grace of the Lord, there is no possibility of one's liberation from the cycle of birth and death in the different species of life through the different grades of planets. So, birth after birth, the living entity is passing through this universe, sometimes upwards, sometimes downwards, sometimes being in species superior to the human being, and sometimes being in the lower regions of the universe, in the lower species. This cycle will not be broken. It is explained, yasyasti bhaktir bhagavatira kinchana sarvir gunais tata samasate sara harava bhaktasho kuto mahatguna manoratena sati davato bahi, that even if a person has all good qualities, that still he is taken away by the chariot of the mind, and the result is that he again will lose these good qualities unless he is Krishna conscious. So therefore, even if one attains the higher births, one will again come down to this middle planetary system, and one can even glide down to lower forms. So this is the nature of life in the material world. The spiritual master is somehow or other, by his causeless mercy, bestowing devotional service upon us, at least the seat of devotional service. And then it must be watered. Javana kirtana, sravana kirtana jalasechana. That by hearing and chanting, one can water this seed and it can fructify into a creeper and finally it can become the full-grown bhakti plant. It is explained that the bhakti plant is a creeper, but although it is a creeper, it is not growing on any support. Generally, creepers are either supported by trees or supported by a wall. They have some support. But the bhakti creeper has no support at all. The bhakti creeper is only resting on bhakti itself. One cannot therefore engage in any mundane pious activity and expect to reach devotional service. Still, the pious may be more favorable. Those who are pious are within the mode of goodness, and those who are within the mode of goodness may be more inclined to accept the Bhakti Lata Beach. But because the spiritual masters are very determined, they can even give this Bhakti Lata Beach to those who are in the lower modes of material nature. It may have to be by some trick, right? And Prabhupada was certainly in favor of that, to trick the conditioned souls into taking up devotional service. So whatever may be, we have to devise different strategies to reach those living entities who are in the various modes of material nature and reach out to them and give them transcendental knowledge. Now that we ourselves have received this seed of devotional service, now it is very important to take care of it very, very diligently. That means one should always make sure that one's bhakti creeper is well taken care of. In other words, the process of devotional service is never a casual process. It may be a fact that if one follows the process, that one automatically becomes purified and automatically becomes advanced. But still, one should never, never take the process casually. One of the main principles in spiritual life is that one must follow the directions of the Supreme Lord. Spiritual life means only that. Bhagavatam states in one of the Chatur Sloki, Rite Ritam Yat Pratyeta Na Pratyeta Chatmani, that we are measuring spirituality by the standard of service to the Supreme Lord. When anything is done in connection with the Supreme Lord, it is considered to be spiritual. And anything that is not in connection with the Supreme Lord, is even if it seems very spiritual, is not spiritual. So, in connection with the Supreme Lord, that statement becomes more qualified if we study the scriptures. Because in the scriptures, the Supreme Lord reveals how he wants us to conduct devotional service. And there are many basic instructions given about spiritual life, and they are grouped together in 64 different aspects of devotional service. The first one being Ado Guru Padasraya. First of all, to take shelter of a spiritual master. Then one can actually be accepted by Krishna. Otherwise, one may feel that one walks the spiritual path. One may feel the inspiration of hearing about Krishna. But such inspiration will not deeply grow roots in the heart. And therefore, unless we are basing our spiritual life on the instructions of Krishna, unless we do so, it will be classified as utpate yaiva kalpate. The point being that scriptures are revealing the will of the Lord, and the will of the Lord must be in the forefront of our mind. Then there is the human element. We are what we are We have traveled through so many bodies. We have traveled through so many conditions of life. And just as the wind picks up the fragrance of a particular field, the wind may carry the sweet fragrance of flowers in spring. We can smell. The smell of spring is there because the trees begin to blossom and the wind has picked up the fragrance. Or in India, there is that familiar smell when you know that you have returned to India. Some, especially if you land in a place like Calcutta where they don't have tunnels and where the door of the plane opens and there's this hot, smelly wall that you can definitely recognize. Phew, India. Ooh, the nose is making a few somersaults. So like that, the wind carries various fragrances. So we as living beings carry our particular fragrance due to attachments that we have developed over so many lives. And this is now very significant to us. And this has now become of crucial importance to us. Of course, whatever is important to us must be measured by this principle of the connection to the Supreme Lord. It must be judged according to the instructions of the Supreme Lord and not according to our feelings. Whether we feel something is important or not is not necessarily favorable for returning to the spiritual world. That is the point. So, therefore, if one really wants to make advancement rapidly, then one becomes very serious about the instructions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the spiritual master. If one is less serious about spiritual life, but a little serious about spiritual life, then one may be in this movement, but also sometimes feel a little bit inclined to be human and to the desires that live in the heart, and one just will say, well, what can I do? And give in to such desires. In such case, one is practicing mixed devotional service. Then the elements of karma or fruitive activity are still part of our devotional service. And we should understand that when we do so, that we are feeding not only the bhakti creeper, but we are also feeding other creepers. So it is explained in the 19th chapter of the Madhya Lila of Chaitanya Charitamrita by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to Rupa Goswami, that along with the bhakti creeper, there are also other creepers that grow up and they look like bhakti creepers, but they are not. And if we are pursuing our own personal desires, then we should know that these other creepers will be watered by that. Just as sravana kirtana jalasechana, or hearing and chanting, water the bhakti creeper, acting upon our own interest will also water creepers. So one can have various creepers. One can have creepers of karma, creepers of sensual enjoyment, or one can have creepers of jnana, creepers of developing independent knowledge through mental speculation. And one can see that such things can also multiply. So this creeper principle is very important because it means that what we do today, which appears to us relatively harmless and appears to us as not such a major deviation, not something to make such a big issue of, is actually a seed which will later turn into a creeper. It tends to grow. Of course, if we water it again and again, each time as we're watering that creeper again and again, it grows and grows and grows. So we must be very careful. In other words, to say it in a different way, if we feed a particular desire, it first may be a tiny little creature, but if we keep on feeding it, it grows up right? And grows up into a monster, right? That is the nature. So we must be careful, with this principle, with the creeper principle of, because whatever one does leaves its mark in our consciousness. Every activity, for every action, a reaction that also exists on the spiritual platform. On the spiritual platform, it is not exactly in the way of karma, but still, every action has an effect on our consciousness. So therefore, whatever we do today is creating tomorrow. And in this way, in devotional service, one must proceed carefully and thoughtfully, that we are not becoming unnecessarily bogged down. Of course, the spiritual master expects that his disciples will sometimes slip a little, sometimes get a little bit attracted by the beautiful landscape. If we speak of the bhakti mark or the path of spiritual life, it takes us through the material world. Sometimes the material world looks clearly dangerous and unpleasant, like a dangerous swamp. At such a time, we're very careful. We're very careful to stay on the path. When things are getting very difficult, oh yes, we are humble and we are careful. But when things are not so difficult, it may change. When Haridas Thakur was arrested for chanting the holy name, he was sent to jail. And in jail, he found many prisoners there, and these prisoners were very happy to see Haridas, such a saint, and they were asking him, please, please bless us. They felt very miserable, and they were humble, and they had been praying to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Haridas blessed them and said, I bless you that you stay as you are. They were totally shocked. Then they were thinking, it went through their head, Haridas is such a powerful devotee, whatever he said certainly will come to pass. So they said, no, not those blessings, please, no. And then Haridas said, I don't think you understood what I meant. He said, don't worry. Within 3 days from now, you will be released from this jail. But I am praying that you will not change. Now you have a very humble, meek demeanor. Now you are totally dependent on the Supreme Lord, and now you are ready to really look for mercy. Now you are really in the proper mood to take spiritual advancement. I pray that you may stay like this. I bless you to that effect. So, when life puts us into difficult circumstances, then we become humbled and we get this mood of dependence on the Vaishnavas, dependence on Krishna, and we accept everything as mercy and are ready to surrender. That is the best consciousness, which actually we should try to maintain. But it's not always like that. Life suddenly transforms. We go around a turn on the path, and suddenly it looks very nice. Beautiful environment. Very... If you leave the door open, it helps my voice. Yeah. Because I have a bit of a affliction from too many kirtans, big ones with all these African wild kirtan singers. Not easy to keep up. Oh hell, boy. Anyway, so sometimes life gets very nice materially. Sometimes we get recognition. Sometimes we are very quickly given a lot of facility to become prominent. When we are given facility to become prominent, then amongst the Vaishnavas, then it becomes more difficult to control one's mind. Because at that point, whatever one says and thinks becomes more important. And as that becomes more important, naturally, we ourselves may also begin to see ourselves as more important. And when we begin to see ourselves as more important, then maybe the inclination may come about to develop some of our own ideas instead of taking shelter of the ideas presented by Lord Krishna and the Acharyas. So, therefore, it may happen that a disciple becomes bewildered. Ramanuja Acharya, in the course of his preaching, came across a great famous scholar named Dasarathi. Oh, Dasarathi was such a known scholar. Everyone was very impressed whenever Dasarathi spoke. But when Dasarathi finally met Ramanuja Acharya, then Dasarathi was very impressed, because he could see that not only does Ramanuja Acharya have great scholarship, but beyond that, he also has perfect devotion. And that I cannot claim. I may know something, but I do not have that same devotion as Ramanuja Acharya. Therefore, Dasarathi, in a sincere mood, desired to surrender. So, just on this occasion, on that same day, there was one disciple of Ramanuja Acharya who was just explaining that there was some difficulty at home because due to some health problem, his wife was not able to cook. So he kind of apologized because Ramanuja Acharya sometimes visited there, and he said he was apologizing, saying that next time he would visit, that he might not be able to provide proper facility, and that therefore maybe it was better if he did not visit. So Ramanuja Acharya then told Dasarathi. He said, "Oh, Dasarathi can go. He can go. He can go and come with you. He can cook." Right? So then he became a cook. Right? And he was just cooking, and for 6 months he accepted the order of Ramanuja Acharya, and he was cooking and cooking. So one day, in his presence, there was a great discussion on some philosophical point amongst a number of the brahmanas, and they were having a whole debate. And at one point, Dasarathi couldn't contain himself anymore and entered into the discussion and made a few statements. And they all said, who are you? You know, what can a cook contribute to this discussion? You know, I mean, you should just listen. You should not try to enter into his discussion when the brahmanas speak. So you can imagine how difficult that was at that moment. And therefore, he said a few more things, and he kept on speaking, actually. And after a little while, the brahmanas became quiet because they could see that this cook was actually quite learned, and that he knew a lot more than they did, even. And in fact, he proved them wrong and established the Siddhanta so clearly that they had to admit defeat. And who are you? Right? And they found out that he was Dasarathi. And everyone was just saying, "No, Dasarathi, the great famous Brahmana scholar, now has become a cook. Why are you doing this?" And he simply said, "It is the order of my spiritual master, and I must follow." Right? So everyone asked, "Who is your spiritual master?" "Ramanuja Acharya." So they went there to Ramanuja Acharya and asked him, "Ramanuja Acharya, please allow Dasarathi to preach again. He has become very humble now. He is very submissive. There's no need to punish him like this. please allow him to use his talents and his abilities. So sometimes the spiritual master may not allow us to use our talents. No, he may not allow. Sometimes he may just put us in a position where we are forced to develop some humility. Because humility is not so easily developed. It is not so easily developed simply by hearing philosophy. One may hear philosophy and read it again and again. We must be humble, but how to become it? Right. So sometimes one will only become humble by being engaged in a very humble, menial position. So sometimes that may be the case. But it is naturally the desire of the spiritual master to empower his disciple, because the spiritual master wants to carry on the mission of the Supreme Lord. And he knows that there is a great need in the world to distribute the mercy of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, the spiritual master is always eager to bestow facility upon his disciple, so that he can get a forum to preach Krishna consciousness, right, as much as possible, right, and get all the necessary attributes of respect and recognition and spiritual position, so that he may have all the facilities to give the mercy as freely as possible. But this is a great test of the maturity of the disciple, who then must remain faithful. A disciple who is not faithful to the spiritual master immediately is not his bhakti creeper becomes stunted, even although he may water it with hearing and chanting. Still, the growth will not nicely take place. So this is a very important principle, which is being upheld by Krishna. Krishna explains so throughout the scriptures. And this one must follow, even if it is difficult. It is difficult because the spiritual master is a human being. And since he is a human being, he has particular human likes and dislikes. Right? He may sometimes like something and prefer one thing over another. Whereas it seems that both things are Krishna conscious, both things are in the favor of making spiritual advancement, both things may be found in scripture, and yet the spiritual master prefers one over the other. And then we go like, but, you know, I mean, both of these things are Krishna conscious, and I feel so inspired in doing the other thing. I mean, why can't I just do that? Right? No. Simply because it's his desire, what can be said. And his desire is to be taken as the desire of the Supreme Lord. So sometimes we are tested to see which desire gets preference, our own desire or the desire of the spiritual master. And suddenly we see that our own so-called spiritual desire turns into a dead-end street, and that the desire of the spiritual master, which is being fulfilled, is that which will give us pure devotional service. Oh, we can continue our own desire in spiritual life, and still the mercy of the spiritual master may be present, because we are remaining within the Krishna consciousness movement. We remain within the bounds of Krishna conscious activities. So, is it so bad? No, it's not so bad. But by doing so, we are watering our fruitive desire. And ultimately, that will mean we will be plagued by sex desire. So ultimately, if we are not very carefully following the instructions of the spiritual master, we will water our sex desire. That will surely happen as a result. So in this way, the process of the devotional service is described as a razor's edge, ksureshidara, a very narrow path, a path where the slightest carelessness will create a cut and blood. So the cut will mean either some offense, or the cut will mean watering some material desire. So we must be careful. Anyhow, the spiritual master is our well-wisher and friend, and is not surprised when there is some imperfection in our performance. Srila Prabhupada was very kind and very forgiving, very merciful, and remained to give shelter. And we see how deep even those who were struggling and who sometimes had great difficulty in spiritual life, and even very much gave up following the prescribed path, that still they remained very, very, very much attached to Srila Prabhupada, and still remembered Prabhupada as their ever well wisher. So this point that Srila Prabhupada always stated in his letters, your ever well wisher, is of course there, and that is the most important of all principles. It is the mercy of the spiritual master that will remain, and over the years, if we look back on our spiritual career, we know that probably we're not going to win the beauty prize, right? If it is a discussion, you know, like which devotee gets the beauty prize of the most wonderful performance in Krishna consciousness, right? And there's going to be a jury that will decide, and they'll put up names for candidates. Even if our list, even if our name gets on the list, probably we're not going to make it. Probably we're not going to get the prize, right? If we look back, you know, over the years at our performance, say, well, it wasn't always so wonderful. I didn't do so great. Yes. So, therefore, with the passing of our life, with the passing of our spiritual life, we realize that we might not make it. We realize that we may not have performed enough pure devotional service to go back to Godhead. We realize that we're no longer young. Young means to be excused, isn't it? Oh, I'm young. You know, I'm young. Oh, to be excused. I made a mistake. Young. Yes. Older. I made a mistake. Yes. But my whole life is a mistake. Right? Sorry. I mean, this life is a mistake. I mean, it was just a mistake. You know, I just did it wrong. Yeah, too late now. Right? You blew it. You blew it. Your life was a mistake. Well, too bad, my friend. So, like this, with time, it becomes more serious. I mean, we begin to see, oh, I'm still not doing very well. I'm still not acting like a pure devotee. And therefore, with time, we become a little more desperate, and we become a little more inclined to bow down with great humility and pray, please, please, my Lord, please, my spiritual master, please pick me up. Please pick me up from this, and please give me shelter. And whatever you say, whatever you desire, all right, I will do that, right? I will no longer pursue my own ideas. I will now be a surrendered soul, because this is the mood that the Lord wants us to cultivate. Just like when you go for driving lessons, right? When I had driving lessons, I had this driving instructor. He looked like a bulldog, you know. He had like really like big round face and a chin and all that. And he was always barking. So I had a hard time even understanding the man's language, you know. So many times I just missed some of his instructions. I couldn't figure it out what he said, you know. Left. What did he say? Left. You know, what did he say? Huh? Why did he just bark at me? You know? And then he would just immediately stamp on the brakes, you know? And it's like, just, right, like, and then I get a long bark about how useless I was behind the wheel, right? So to tolerate this man was very difficult. And several times I thought of after we stopped the car, after he braked, right? To get out of the car, tell him, drive yourself, you know? Yeah? I'm not your driver, you know? I'm not gonna drive you anymore. But ultimately, you know, I wasn't driving for that guy. I was driving for myself. And, well, I guess he forced me to become an attentive driver. I had to be very attentive to what he said, and he was very meticulous, very particular. The guy was a real pain, but, you know, so often, and nothing was right. Everything was wrong. But in the end, I must say, I passed my exam the first time, which, you know, most people in Holland don't, right? But with such an instructor, there was no way around it, boy. Everything was wrong with this man. Everything was always wrong. So, like, when finally I went through the driver exam, that was a breeze. The guy was such a softie compared to my instructor. That life was easy. Yeah. So in that way, one can also take it that in the relationship with our spiritual master, we are actually developing the proper attitude, which is the attitude of the spiritual world. The attitude of the residents of the spiritual sky is an attitude of just being very, very humble, and being humble servants. Of course, in a very refined mood, because we're seeing how, Lalita is described to have a sharp tongue, right? Krishna is oftentimes accusing her of having like a very sharp tongue, and she surely is there every time to tell Srimati Radharani, let's go, let's get out of here, let's leave this debauchee behind. He's totally unreliable. Don't trust him. Don't let him take advantage of you. Don't let him exploit. Come on, we're going. Yes. So in this spirit, she's very humble, right? Very humble. Her humility may not be so easily seen because she's chastising Krishna. Is that so humble? Yes, she's humble because she is totally serving Srimati Radharani and not trying to compete and not trying to take her place. She's always the servant, right? So in this way, that is that is the spiritual world, to always be the servant. And it is very difficult to become a servant. Only one who is such a servant, who's always thinking, what would my spiritual master like? Peacefully. What would he really like? Not even thinking like, oh, what is he like? Yes, he likes this. No, no. What does he really like? Deeply thinking and trying to become that. Right? That disciple is most glorious. And that disciple is the one who becomes the most exalted. Without a doubt. He becomes eligible to return to the spiritual sky. With that, I begin to make the same point over and over. So that means I must have come to the end of this class. So if there are any questions or comments, I'll try to answer. Positive thinking. Well, positive thinking is a very loaded term because it comes out of the world of psychology. So, if we are speaking about positive thinking in terms of psychology, then it is not at all favorable, because positive thinking in the psychological sense is that just see everything as good, everything is fine, everything is to be accepted. Don't worry about the mistakes. Just think about the positive service you're doing for Krishna, and this is everything. So this is not like Vaishnav attitude. The Vaishnav attitude is different. The Vaishnav attitude is one of increasing the quality. So a Vaishnav is ready to be honest with himself and to admit, yes, I'm making mistakes, and to face these mistakes and to say, I must conquer them, I must overcome them. Now, some things are easy to overcome and some things are very difficult to overcome. Some, like, for example, if we say, I'm not going to be envious anymore, it doesn't work like that. Right? Again and again, we'll fall prey to envy. But still, one could say, I'm going to make a very serious endeavor to do all the things that are favorable to overcome envy. So rather than just a passionate approach from I'm not going to be anymore, we'll have a deeper approach and a more long-term program. Then we become more solid in our spiritual life. So a Vaishnava, but when it comes to positive thinking for a Vaishnava, then a Vaishnava applies that not to himself, but applies that to others. Right? Positive thinking we reserve for others. Negative thinking we do about ourselves. Right? But positive thinking we think about others. Now again, negative thinking not in the sense that we are not ever thinking anything good about ourselves. No, we think a lot of good about ourselves also, because we got so much mercy of our spiritual master. And it would be, practically speaking, an insult to our spiritual master if we'd say that nothing worked. I'm just totally fallen. I have no qualifications, nothing. So many things are amazing. Look, we're following four regulative principles. It's a miracle. All due by the mercy of our spiritual master. I mean, an inconceivable change. See, so it's not that a Vaishnav doesn't see that he has made some advancement, but he never takes credit for it. He never takes credit. He accepts that this, look how great the mercy is of my spiritual master. Look how wonderful it works. Like Lord Chaitanya said that by this chanting he had become mad. And his spiritual master said, oh, you are very fortunate. You are very fortunate. And so, although we look at ourselves, recognizing our own shortcomings, we do so in honesty, not artificially. Not like, it's not a Vaishnav attitude to, I'm the most fallen, I'm so fallen, I'm so fallen, I'm so fallen. No, that's no good. Right? It's not that we chant, I'm so fallen, I'm so fallen, I'm so fallen. But rather, we are remembering in honesty our mistakes, and we notice it, right? Is every holy name that we chant, is it wonderfully chanted? Or are we chanting so many names kind of on automatic pilot? Right? Are we always perfect in our dealings with the Vaishnavas? Or are we sometimes off balance? Are we always the perfect servant of our spiritual master, or is there a lot we should still develop in that relationship? And like that. So it is honesty that the Vaishnavas are employing to get introspection. But towards others, positive thinking. Seeing their good qualities, seeing their how nice they are, giving them all respect. Like that. That's Vaishnava. it may be difficult. So I would say, if we are not sure, if someone points out a fault and we clearly know that it's true, okay, then it's easy. But if it's something where we think, well, is this really so? Maybe we cannot just in our heart recognize what the person has said and therefore not really embrace it, you know, and say, yes, this is my fault, okay, I have to work on this. But then at least we should take it as a warning, and that we should be attentive about this. Like, so if someone says, like, we have a certain tendency and we cannot fully recognize that we have it, then we should start be on the lookout for it and see if in the future again, if this tendency actually is there after all in us, yeah, in other situations. So then we can take it as a warning. Because if we artificially just accept something without really recognizing it in our heart, then it's not really gonna do it, right? You say, you know, someone chastises you for being not having certain Vaishnava qualities, but if we don't recognize it in the heart, we can say, yes, I'm so sorry and be so humble, but it doesn't really bring about real humility. That's external. It must go deeper. We must actually recognize, isn't it? If a Vaishnava points out a fault in us, ideally we should recognize that fault, think, yes, he's right, now I should rectify. We should work on this. But if we cannot recognize the fault, then I think we should take it as a warning. And then now watch out to see if we really have this fault. In percentage, it's very... Well, yeah. Okay. Yeah. I think that when you do exactly what the spiritual master wants, etc., then you are on a very safe path, right? Without a doubt. Then you are really on the path of getting a lot of mercy. If you are within Krishna consciousness, but kind of acting according to your own inspiration, I mentioned it earlier on, then you are maintaining some fruitive tendency, yeah, which will ultimately manifest itself in sex desire. Yeah. But still, the devotional service is so powerful. It is so powerful that nonetheless one gets purified. And that nonetheless one can go back to Godhead. And the spiritual master is also pleased with that in the end. Right? The spiritual master says, yes. And you see, Prabhupada, in many cases, some disciple found it very difficult to function and even moved out of the society and started to live on his own. And Prabhupada said, but as long as he's still chanting Hare Krishna and following the principles, I will accept him. I'll accept him. As long as he's still following, I will accept him. So Prabhupada was still accepting. But the spiritual master in the end is also accepting and will be pleased. So his pleasure may also come after. This disciple did not exactly do what I wanted, but actually he did nice service all along. So one can still get the blessings also afterwards. And one will certainly get the blessings of Krishna. Because the spiritual master is ultimately just desiring that someone goes back to Godhead, and he's not trying to squeeze people into a narrow path. And he may be very strict, and he may also see that this disciple cannot do this. It's also the spiritual master must also be flexible along the way, right? And must also be must also adjust. We see Prabhupada adjusted to disciples many times, right? Adjusted the instruction, adjusted the program, accepted the independent program of a disciple. Not if it was sinful. He wouldn't bless that. He might still accept a person, hate the sin, not the sinner, but obviously he was not blessing that. But like that, even if one is taking up some other service, not the recommended service, but another service, and one faithfully does that for and really takes that, it will also become blessed. And the spiritual master will recognize it and bless it for sure, without a doubt. Srila Prabhupada is the founder of Acharya, and therefore Srila Prabhupada made the rules. And Srila Prabhupada gave authority to the organization and the organizational structure, and wanted us to be part of it. And with that, of we are interacting with the GBC and temple president and so on. Srila Prabhupada even gave the GBC authority over monitoring the spiritual masters. Right? So even if a disciple is totally outside the society, and not then he's living outside the society, but he's following everything. So in that case, the GBC is a little far removed from him, very far removed from his life. If a disciple lives in the temple, the GBC and temple president and other authorities of the managerial hierarchy will be much more involved in his life. But even if one lives totally in a private situation, still the GBC has some authority in monitoring the performance of a spiritual master, that he is a faithful servant of Prabhupada. So there is a check and balance for everyone. No one is independent. And that is the reason for the organization, to create that check and balance. Right? Because in this age, there are so many pitfalls. Right? So many pitfalls. Either one can, on the gross sensual plane, get difficulties, or one can on the mental plane get some difficulties and slightly deviate a little bit philosophically, this way, that way. Therefore, the check and balance system, the accountability, is there. And that is the main purpose for the organization. And we need that to some extent. Well, the GBC body has made resolutions on this. And the resolution is that they should, that the spiritual master should not instruct the disciple to go elsewhere, right, against the desire of the temple president, unless the disciple has some particular personal problem in that relationship, in that situation where he is and needs some adjustment. But if a disciple is doing fine in some temple, then the spiritual master should not instruct the disciple to leave that temple, etc. In other words, there must be between the spiritual authorities and the managerial authorities, there must be a spirit of cooperation. It's more on that level where it should be resolved than that the disciple has to resolve this, you know, like, and he's in between like two levels of authorities, and one is encouraging him in another, in one way, another in another way, and he's got a great dilemma. That is not very good. So, of course, sometimes this may come about unwillingly, and to some extent it will be there what can be done, because the moods are different. Okay? Sometimes, what can you say? A spiritual master is an individual with a particular person. The managerial authorities are individuals with a particular personality, and each of them have different outlooks about different things. So it may not always be so much about going here and going there, but it may just be an opinion. You know, let's say the Gaudiya Math, right? Yeah, well, there are so many opinions about the Gaudiya Math, and your spiritual master may have a different opinion about that than your temple president. Right? It could be. Although, within the context of the GBC resolutions, etc., but even within that context, there is room for interpretation, room for application, and so on. So, one has to So a disciple has to learn to balance these differences and to satisfy all, right? But in matters of Siddhanta, he accepts the authority of the spiritual master, right? That is the point. Ultimately, the spiritual master teaches the Siddhanta, but in terms of practice and in terms of cooperation in service, he will very much accept the directions from the managerial hierarchy in our mind. Yes. It is said, well, then we are looking at when a spiritual master begins to deviate in one way or another, either philosophically or sensually, then the time comes that someone should speak to him, obviously, about that. And it may be best done through some peers or some other senior personalities. If a spiritual master seriously deviates, then a disciple even has the right to confront him. He may then go before him and say, please don't mind, always in a respectful mood, but he will say, please don't mind that I am presenting these points, but the things you have been teaching seem to really contradict these and these points that are clearly established by Srila Prabhupada throughout his book. So how can we deal with that? That right he has. And if that would be major, then we have a major problem, right? Where some spiritual master might have developed some difficulties. That could be. And then the whole system of checks and balances goes into motion, yeah, which exists with the whole bureaucracy, etc. Of course, that's highly unfortunate when it comes to that stage. That's very sad. Yes. No one is going to be a cat copy of Srila Prabhupada. We are not clones, right? So some difference of mood will be there. Yeah? You know, that is natural. We cannot be completely the same as Srila Prabhupada is. But still, the emphasis in terms of the importance of preaching Krishna consciousness as much as Srila Prabhupada had that, right? That main emphasis must be there. Within that main emphasis, there can be some difference. You know, some spiritual master may be more inclined. Well, this morning I saw a picture of Krishna Kshetra Prabhu, so he's still fresh in my memory. So he's interested in deity worship, right? Another spiritual master may not be involved in deity worship. So there's a difference there. And we see that many of the disciples of Krishna Kshetra Prabhu will also be inclined towards deity worship. Yeah, we see that. So that may be, and that's fine. That's fine. That's all within the greater mood of Srila Prabhupada. Yes, you need some who are real pujaris, right, and who are very dedicated. Yes, we need some who are totally sold out to book distribution. Right, we need some adventurous preachers like Prithu, right, who just are always ready to do it again, you know, and shave somebody up, right? It's like, we need that, right? We need that. So, variety is the spice of life. And in a spiritual movement, we are going to have different personalities, very different. And one must learn to deal with the personality of one's spiritual master. And you know, one learns that the spiritual master has a particular nature. Right, and yes, some spiritual masters will make an issue out of something, and somebody else's spiritual master doesn't, you know. And why does my spiritual master have to make a problem? I would rather have the instruction of the other spiritual master. No, we have to go with it now, with the mood of our spiritual master. Yes. A spiritual master should be a pure devotee, should be a Mahabhagavata. The only question is, where does it begin, Mahabhagavata, and where does it end? See, because because by nature we are blockheads, right? And we want everything in little squares, etc. We have a very rigid label of Mahabhagavata, and we think that Mahabhagavata is to be measured with a microscope and begins here and ends there, and because we have read some quotes in some book somewhere, and we think that that's the all in all and the final word on it all. But Mahabhagavata really means totally dedicated in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, totally dedicated in the service of the spiritual master, of his own spiritual master. A spiritual master should be. He must be. He should not have any other agenda. He should have only one agenda, the pleasure of my spiritual master. No other agenda. Otherwise, what kind of spiritual master is he? Yeah? If he has any other agenda. Now, does that mean he may not have a trace of any other desire? Well, it would be very nice if he doesn't, but if he does, and he doesn't act up any other trace of desire, then that's also in the service of the spiritual master. So then we say it begins somewhere there. So where does it begin, and where does it end? Yeah. Just like, I give that example of early in the morning, nippy morning, and walking past the bakery. Boy, that fresh baked bread, you know, it brings water to your mouth, right? You're hungry, you know, but it's karmi bread, right? So you know very well, you know, water or no water in the mouth, you know, forget it. You know, I'm not gonna forget this, you know. But the body responds, right, to the smell. All right, the mind responds, but the intelligence says no. So that's good. That's vacha vegam, manasa krodha vegam, jiva vegam, mudra pasta vegam, ittan vegam, yuvisahita dhira sarvam apimam pitivim sasishyat. That is the qualification for making disciples all over the world. Right? So that is Mahabhagavata. Yeah. So we should understand that we are so rigid with definitions, but the acharyas are not. Look here. Srila Prabhupada says in this purport, he says, after getting this seed, if one sows it in his heart and pours water on it by hearing and chanting, that seed grows into a big plant, and there are fruits and flowers which a living entity can enjoy. So we're talking about the bhakti creeper, and the fruits and flowers we know are Krishna prema. And then in the next sentence, Prabhupada said, that is called the Brahma-Bhuta stage. Now, Gauranga, what would you say there? Is that the Brahma-Bhuta stage? I mean, technically speaking, is that the Brahma-Bhuta stage? Or would you say that from the verse, Brahma-Bhuta prasanatmana kamsatina sosati samasarvasa bhutasim bhakti lamate param, that actually we are speaking about the second half of the verse? Yes, see? Mat bhaktin labhate param. We're speaking about bhakti, pure devotional service. Some might say, this is not Brahma-Bhuta. But you can see, the acharyas are more liberal. This is also Brahma-Bhuta. It's the extended definition of Brahma-Bhuta. See? So, you know, but because we are blockheads, right? You know, we want like everything, because we're trying to capture what we don't know. So we're trying to define it. And so we say, Mahabhagavata, what is it? An unknown entity. Okay, Mahabhagavata must fit in this box. And if he doesn't fit, you know, sorry, it's not a Mahabhagavata. But what is Mahabhagavata? Mahabhagavata, totally dedicated to the Bhagavat, to the person Bhagavat, and to the book Bhagavat. Never deviating from it. He is certainly a Mahabhagavat. Or are we going to bring the prem measurement, how much prem does he have? It's like, what is prem? Even there. Not easy. Where does prem begin? And where does it end? Again, are we going to measure everything in boxes? Okay, thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada. Ki jai.